Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Cool for lots of things, education certainly, but also awareness. It stimulates their ability to communicate. We even make theatre for babies. I don't know whether there are people making theatre for babies in Singapore yet, but certainly over here, shows for very, very young children. Because they're so porous and so receptive to those kind of experiences.
Melting Pot, a global podcast series hosted by Pyle, connects guests who have inspiring stories and reaches out to a multicultural audience over 52 countries. Guests are diverse, such as celebrities, entrepreneurs, travelers, and many more who've had a turning point in their lives and moved over to a holistic lifestyle. Follow us on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, Google Podcasts, social media.
Hi everyone. Today I am in conversation with Kate Gullidge. Kate has woken up really, really early to have this conversation with me. A very quick introduction. Kate is a UK-based theatre director. She specializes in new musicals and making work with and for young people. And she's also an associate artist of the Singapore Repertory Theatre. Thank you so much for joining me. You're this morning, Kate.
Thank you for having me. I guess it's nearly bedtime for you.
Well, not quite, but getting there, yes. Just before we, you know, dive deep into theatre and things like that. I just wanted to let the audience know that before we started the interview, we were talking about your love for Singapore. And, I wonder how that came about and how you got involved with SRT.
I met Gaurav Kripalani, who is the artistic director of SRT, back in 2012. We were introduced by a mutual friend of ours who is a writer and director, who had created a lot of work for The Little Company, which is the part of SRT that makes children's theatre. And he knew that Gaurav was looking for a director, and he hooked us up and we hit it off immediately. And I came out back in 2012 to do a production of Fantastic Mr. Fox, and fell in love with the country and with the people and with the team at the theatre. And I've been back almost every year since then to make shows with them. And I now have, as I was just saying before we started recording, I have what I call my Singapore family, who are the actors and stage managers and all the people who, wonderful people who work in the office. They feel like family to me.
That's wonderful. Okay, so now I think we can backtrack to how did theatre become a part of your life? Is it something that you always wanted to do, or you stumbled on it? So just a little background to that.
Yeah, I think I always remember loving drama, even as a very young child. I didn't make the decision to go into theatre as a career until I was probably in high school. But even then, I went to a high school that didn't have many alumni that went on into a career in theatre. So I wondered about teaching for a while. I knew I wanted to do something with people. My memories, my childhood memories are of being I still am an enormous reader, and I used to spend my Saturdays in the library. So I think my shallow end to theatre was just always a fascination with storytelling and characters and what stories are, and that then developed into more of a love for how we tell stories and to whom. I was involved in quite a lot of youth theatre when I was young, and now I'm on the other end of it. I'm the grown-ups that help to run and manage and direct the youth theatre. I love youth theatre, and I think it's really quite incredible. So all of those things came together to create a direction for me that I initially thought was going to be performing. I did a degree in acting first before becoming a director. But even as an actor, I was always taking an overview, and I could see my part of it, but I could also see the whole thing. So I was drawn to the other side and to being the one that shapes the story and the experience.
So what do you think is a parallel between drama and storytelling?
I think drama and storytelling are the same thing in different ways. I think drama is the art of storytelling in a theatrical context. So they're both about communicating ideas and experiences to an audience, whether that's an audience that is reading, watching, listening. I think it's about inviting an audience to empathise with the characters or with the storyteller's perspective if it's a book. I think they're parallel forms of creative expression.
Okay. Yeah. I guess it makes sense. Yeah. So earlier on you mentioned that you were and you are very involved with youth theatre. So what is the fascination with that? That's one. And two, what's the difference between youth theatre and adult theatre?
Good question. Do you mean making theatre for children or with children? Which one should we do first?
Your choice.
Okay.
We need to do both.
We need to do both. And actually, it's that I only raise that because I think this is a thing that I often find I'm talking about, because there is quite a clear distinction between the two, and both hugely worthwhile and wonderful experiences. I've got a son who is going to turn 6 tomorrow. And he has grown up coming to the shows that I make and that his dad also makes as a lighting designer. And it's wonderful to take him and to see how he responds to those shows, because it is a way of telling stories that really creates that sense of empathy and connection in very, very young children. Inviting the children into a world that is so complete, so atmospheric and immersive can actually be a very powerful tool for lots of things, education certainly, but also awareness. It stimulates their ability to communicate. We even make theatre for babies. I don't know whether there are people making theatre for babies in Singapore yet, but certainly over here, shows for very, very young children, because they're so porous and so receptive to those kind of experiences. Yeah.
And I think visual experience for children that young, I think is far more impactful than reading. I mean, okay, reading also stimulates their imagination, but
yeah.
I think, yeah, the visual impact I can understand is a lot more meaningful.
I think for children as well, they don't compartmentalize their lives in the way that we do. So when you when you take a child to the theatre, they will then come home and they'll recreate everything and they'll sort of live it again. And I think that's really extraordinary to be able to model for them how they're able to play in that really imaginative way.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
And of course, that is really different to making theatre with young people. So the shows that I do tend to have a lower age limit of about 10. I have worked on shows that do have younger children in them, but those have tended to be things like, I worked on a production of The Wizard of Oz where we had very young children playing the Munchkins. But the youth theatre shows that I do are with young people from about 10. It's really interesting to see how sometimes children that maybe are not regular learners can really apply themselves and throw themselves into working in a theatrical context because it's kinetic and it's emotional and it's about being on your feet and it fires different parts of the brain that are not about sitting at a desk and learning. So they can really thrive in those situations. People often ask what the difference is between working with young actors and older actors, and really there is no difference. It's all the same. There is nothing that young actors can't do that adult actors can do. Obviously, sometimes there are areas of life experience yet to be discovered, but in terms of the technical way that we work and our expectations of them and what we would ask them to do,
their response to it, is it that they're more receptive? Are you able to mold them? Do you have conversations with them? What would your process be when you're actually directing children, as you mentioned, around the age of 10 and above? What kind of a process do you follow? That's one. And two, I'm curious to know, are you more focused on musicals, or do you also do like regular theatre?
Normal theatre, where people don't sing.
I didn't know how.
I do occasionally do normal theatre where people don't sing, but not often. I like people singing. The process is, let's do regular non-singing theatre first. With young people, it would be a lot about inviting them in to spend time in the world. So I can use as an example, I directed a play last year that was part of a wonderful festival of community work at the Almeida, which is a theatre in London. And we had two professional actors, and then we had 12 young people who played young people. And actually in that production, they were playing versions of themselves. So there wasn't that much contextualizing that I needed to do with them, because they were playing students living through online learning in the time of COVID, which they had just all done.
Right.
If anything, with them, it was about encouraging them to have fun and to be able to operate as bodies in a physical space rather than a digital space, because they were very much class of COVID. In the play, the students went on a protest. And so with that particular group of students, we did a lot of work around protest and what it means to stand up for things that you're passionate about. There was one very memorable rehearsal where, in a very controlled way, we encouraged them to have arguments with each other. So we invited them all to write on sticky notes issues that were of interest to them or that they felt very engaged with. And our learning object, our sort of outcome for that session was to just fire up their inner activist, so that then when they were playing these students who were being very activist-y on stage, they would be able to have a physical connection with that. And we collected all of the things they'd written, and then we chose one, which actually was about making period products free. And we split the group in half and we had a debate, and we debated for and against, and it got very, very heated, and we allowed them to swap sides because obviously everyone was very pro the idea of making period products free. And by the end of the session, they all felt at the kind of level of jazzed up that we needed them to be in doing this protest. We also I do quite a lot of free writing. So I would get them to write in journals their own personal responses to things. And we had reflective time at the end of every session where they could.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Write about what we had done and just sort of start to process it all before they left the room. There was a scene in the play where the students were putting on a version of Oh, What a Lovely War. And so we did some work on that, what it was when it was written, what it was based on. We looked at war poetry. The students that they were playing were drama students, and the teacher was their drama teacher. So I ran a session for them and said, this is how your drama teacher would have run this session. And so it was about bringing things to life and all of the great things that she would have done with them. So it was just a lot about living in the world of the play. I tend to do as much of that as possible before starting staging. So I play a game of chicken about how late do I think I can do the actual staging? Because if you do all of the foundational work first, the staging is easy.
Yeah.
Because you can just say to them, it's that thing that we did last week. And they'll just make it with you and for you.
Yeah, yeah.
The only difference between that and musicals, where people sing in your face, is that we would do a lot of the same world building stuff, but at some point they would have to sit and learn the music. So think a session that looks more like choir, in order to learn the music, and then they would have to learn the choreography. What is consistent across all my processes is that the staging, which we call blocking, the blocking always comes from the performers. So I very, very rarely impose blocking on them. I would invite them, I'd sort of provoke them to come up with moves, to invent things, and then I would shape it with them. But I very rarely have a fixed idea in my mind of what things should be before I get in the room. So it's really super collaborative, and it means for them that they have a real sense of ownership of it. It's a piece that they've created.
Yeah, that's interesting, because with kids, you know, it also, it gives them that that sense of importance as well, and the fact that, you know, they have contributed and they are they're equal and in their involvement. And then I think they're probably a lot more enthusiastic and a lot more engaged as compared to someone telling them, okay, this is where you're going to stand. This is what, you know, I completely get that. And so it's very free flow, and it helps with with, so they communicate better, probably.
Yeah, they do. And something that I don't, we all have our tricks, don't we? But one of my tricks would be to set things up in a warm-up or in a game. So if I needed to do an underwater sequence, I would do a big warm-up about moving through water and making sound effects. And if you set it up as something that is really fun, it means that when you get to it in rehearsal, you can just say, do you remember that thing we did this morning? And it's already in their bodies as being fun.
Yeah.
So I'm always looking for ways to take the pressure away from any performer, because it's, performing is a really self-conscious act. And so anything that I think, as a holder of that space, anything that I can do to help performers feel more confident, or yeah, just more supported by the process, I'm always trying to refine and collect those.
Interesting. Okay, so let's just move away for a second from actual, you know, the actual performances, and I'm keen and curious to know what is the role of women as theatre directors. Are we seeing more of that in today's times? Is it, has it become easier? You know, just a little kind of what's the word? Just a little impression that you have, because you yourself are a theatre director and you're a woman.
I think historically directing was quite a male pursuit, certainly in the years since I've graduated, I've seen more women in leadership positions in this country. We've got more female artistic directors and executive directors of theatres and organisations than we've ever had. We still have a long way to go in terms of our ethnic diversity, but we are addressing the gender question, and certainly there's more, I think there's more awareness about how you build a team than there has ever been, which I think is a really important step. There are lots of brilliant young female directors that I mentor, and my hope for them as recent graduates is that they would look at a workforce that is more gender balanced than the one that I was looking at when I was graduating.
Right, yeah.
And I think there's other things as well that we're realizing that specific insights can really help with. So if you're doing a play that is very particularly about the experience of being a mother, then perhaps the producer might want to recruit a director who was a mother or a father. So I think as time goes on, we'll see more of a synergy between the content and the people who are telling the story.
Interesting.
Hmm.
Does theatre impact social change in any way, in your opinion?
Gosh, what a huge question. I mean, of course, theatre can. It's been used as a tool for social change for a very, very long time, in lots of different ways. And if you're interested in reading more, there's a great book that you can get called A Restless Art by Francois Matarazzo, who's a wonderful community artist and teacher. I think there's a few things that theatre can do really brilliantly. We can certainly raise awareness about social issues. We can bring them to the front of people's minds. Productions can sort of safely explore topics like racism, inequality, injustice.
They're doing it.
I would say they are doing it. And also they can do it in in a way that can help to mobilise individuals and communities. I think that's the very particular thing that theatre can do. Empathy, again, always, theatre's about building empathy. So I think providing a space where we can portray the experiences of all sorts of different people and invite an audience to see the world through their eyes, it can lead to more dialogue, more discussion about issues. There's at the moment the Arts Council here in the UK are running a big, the Arts Council is the big funding body that that financially supports institutions and also individuals, but their whole campaign at the moment is called Let's Create, and it's all about participation. So when you apply for funding at the moment here, you have to be very clear about what your participation element is, and that is all about connecting with communities, connecting with it's not just new audiences, but it's you know, about what you're going to do, which can be the start of that conversation about social change.
So the messaging, the messaging,
Exactly. Okay. Yeah,
interesting. I think they do some of that in Singapore as well.
Right.
Yeah. So I think the community building and creating this awareness is.
Yeah.
Is you're absolutely right. I mean, through theatre, it's a very, very possible tool for that to happen and bring about positive change. So,
and I think it's partly about telling stories and encouraging conversations, but I think it's also about empowering those communities to be able to tell their own stories. So we have a couple of companies here in the UK, two that spring to mind, Cardboard Citizens, which is a company that works with homeless people. Mm-hmm. And they use theatre to give them a voice. And the shows are not always about the experience of homelessness, but just being able to provide a platform for those people to come together and do something, I think is, it challenges the stigma and the stereotypes, and it there's another one called Clean Break, which is a theatre company that works with women who have experienced the criminal justice system. So, and I know that their aims are about empowering women, challenging the stereotypes and also raising awareness. So sometimes the people that are performing can also be changing both themselves and changing the audience's perception.
That's good. So before we end the conversation, any advice for young theatre directors, men, women, any advice in terms of if they're starting out, what are some of the things that they should really watch out for, any words of encouragement?
Words of wisdom. what advice do I want to hear? What's the vision of the world you're trying to create? Is the question. And that can mean the world that we live in, mm-hmm. or it can mean the world that you're making. I think as a director, the secret sauce that you have that no one else has is about holding really tight to the vision of the world you're trying to create, and then encouraging everyone else to go on that journey with you, and also not being afraid to ask them to share your vision and to ask them what tools have you got. Come on board, come, this is the world, how can you bring all of yourself to it and create this world together? And I think for young theatre directors, a really important thing is to find your tribe. Some of the people that I'm working with now, I've been working with for 20 years. And if you can find a tribe of people that will support you But and also challenge.
I guess share your vision as well, right?
Yeah, share your vision, but also challenge you, not be afraid to ask the difficult questions or to call you out when you're not doing things as you should be.
Yeah,
I think that's really important. Directing can be quite a lonely, because there's only ever one of you in a room usually. And if there is more than one, there's a hierarchy, because it would be a director and an assistant.
Yeah.
So you've got to have those people that are, you're able to be completely honest with.
Okay.
And read lots of books. Read all the books. And see all the theatre. And don't be afraid of musicals.
Love musicals.
Hooray!
Thank you so much, Kate. This was such a fun conversation, and you know, I hope the people viewing and listening to this episode have a clear takeaway from it. And I've really enjoyed chatting with you, and I'm hoping to see you. I know you'd rather see me here in Singapore rather than me in London, but
yeah, I'm not going to London. I'm coming to Singapore.
So you're more than welcome, and I look forward to that. And then we can go to Lau Pa Sat together. That's a deal.
Perfect. Thank you. Perfect. I'll see you there. It's been lovely talking. Thank you.
Likewise. Thank you. Bye. Bye for now, Kate. Bye.
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 For more weekly conversations, do listen to Melting Pot on Spotify, Apple and Google Podcasts. Follow us on YouTube and on Instagram at Podcast Melting Pot. So until the next episode, this is Pyle signing off.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.